maybe it's time for us to follow everyone else and go, okay, who are we? Because everything's like, you know, a lot of things, oh, you've got to cry. But I don't generally want to cry every day. It's not something I really, you know, that's not a big thing for me. I'd rather have the ability to have a laugh.
Welcome to the Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell. Talking business ownership, the nuts and bolts, and everything in between.
G'day, listeners, and welcome back to the Tradies Business Show. I'm Warwick, your host, and I've got an episode with a difference today. You might have gathered from the little snippet at the start that this is not your usual episode, but I think it's a cracker. I came across today's guest a little bit randomly, but I was introduced to him via a mutual friend who works in the area of men's rights. Now, ladies, don't tune out just yet. I have a fascinating chat with Michael, with my guest today, about a whole bunch of issues that are affecting society, and they're relevant to us as business owners because, as you know, business is really about people. And so, you know, we talk a lot about the way people are responding to things these days, about some of the social issues affecting us. And in particular, we touch on suicide and suicide prevention. As you know, I'm passionate about work in this area. So bit of an episode with a difference. You know, it gets perhaps a little controversial at times. Maybe some people might be offended. And as I say in the recording, certainly not our intention, but really just looking to ask a lot of questions and perhaps just think a little differently about some of the things affecting us these days as business owners and mums and dads and partners and members of society. So strap yourself in and give me your feedback. If you've got specific feedback you'd like to give me, hit me on the Facebook page, Tradies Business Show, or via the website, tradiesbusinessshow.com. Love to hear from you, whether you love it, hate it, you know, want to threaten me with violence. You'll hear there's a little reference to that in the recording. So anyway, enjoy the episode, and I look forward to hearing your comments. Joining me today on the Tradies Business Show is a man by the name of Michael Griffith. Now, Michael is Skyping in from sunny Melbourne. I don't know if it's sunny down there at the moment, Michael, but welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you here. Well, it's my pleasure anyway. I hope you're pleased. mates, as I always say to my guests, rather than me do a shitty job of introducing you, can you do a shitty job of introducing yourself, and that way you can take the credit?
All right. I'm a father of two from Melbourne, and I do playwriting. And I usually do playwriting about issues. And I've just recently had a friend of mine take his own life, and so I had a play in my head for ages about an anti-suicide play aimed at men. And so I've written it, and now we're putting it on, and now, you know, there's sort of people starting getting interest. And Warwick was one of them, so we're getting interviewed here. Very excited about it.
Thanks, mate. You did pretty well, Michael. You did a much better job than I would have done, mate, I can tell you. So obviously I want to talk to you about the play, and we'll talk about suicide, and listeners to the show will know that I'm very passionate about making a difference in this area, and I do some work with Mates in Construction and some of those organisations. But mate, I'm interested writing plays. Like, you don't look like a typical playwright. You're not wearing a beret. You don't have little glasses on your nose, or maybe you got them in your pocket, but yeah. Tell me and our listeners a bit about your background, Michael. How did you come to be writing plays?
Well, I went to a Catholic school that kindly told me to leave in year 10 because I was causing too much trouble. And I've just been doing jobs, you know, just whatever jobs I can get since then, really. And writing was something I've always done. I just like writing stories about people I work with, people I meet. And about 10 years ago or something, or quite a, I finally got, I went to one of them into a competition. It was about a little old Anglo-Indian man. And it was a national competition. I thought just to see if they're any good. And the thing won. I was like, oh, shit. and then I went and saw a play. I came to Melbourne, saw a play, and I thought, I didn't like it. I didn't like it was about a working class guy. I didn't like how he was being portrayed. I thought it was a bit of a cliche. So I started writing some. And, there's a local theatre down here called La Mama, which does new playwrights, and they've done loads of mine. So it's this is what we do, and I just really get a buzz out of it. And this one is particularly special to me because it is about blokes. We even went to a theatre recently where this woman who runs the theatre, when I spruced it to her, I said, look, I got this idea for the play, and she actually said, oh, only women buy tickets. Oh, it's a terrible idea. It sort of pissed me off a bit.
Red rag to a bull, mate.
Yeah.
So you said you write plays about issues. What are some of the issues that you've written plays about, or some of the issues that get up your grill, mate?
Oh, well, we just had one on just recently called The Magnolia Tree, which is going on in Canberra in the start of next year. And that was interesting. That was about a family getting together to put their mother into a nursing home. The mother had Alzheimer's. And both women in the family were very poor. And then one of them was a single mother, and she was like, she wanted the mum to go into the nursing home, but she just wanted mum looked after, but she was also looking forward to her share of the money so that she could get something together for her kids, because she's got no future, can't afford a house, can't afford this, and was looking at a future. Then she found out how much money the nursing home was going to take, and was like, oh my God, you know, so she's like, she's spending her kid's future on her mum that was gone. And then the brother suggested that they let mum go tonight, and he bought the means to do it. At the end of the play, Act 3, the audience voted, and the audience decided, because this woman, Deborah, leaves the room to kill her mother, and the audience votes, does she do it or does she not? And jeez. I expected they know every night. But it ended up in the end, it was 3-4, they voted to let mum go. And we were a bit in shock. So it's wow. Quite complex too, but it was to try show how hard it's getting out there for people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How some people have a morality that they can't afford anymore. And stuff like this. And this mother was like a grizzly bear mother, really. She had her kids, and the kids were...
Yep.
So it was, so it was really interesting. And when she came down at the end, it was a secret vote. You never knew until the last moment whether she'd done it or not. And the audience would just go, every time they saw she'd done it, the audience would go like, oh! it was really interesting, really electric.
That's a bit of an Orwellian experiment, mate.
But I haven't told my mum. My mum's in Perth. She keeps going...
It's about gardening. Yeah.
Gardening.
But that
was really interested me because in Melbourne, homelessness and especially amongst mature women is huge on the rise like crazy. People can't afford rent, they can't afford this.
Yeah.
Australia's changing as we know it.
Yeah.
You know, right in front of our eyes. And the politicians seem to see it like this.
Yeah. With hands over the eyes, mate. So it's something I want to dig into, and I might be drawing a long bow in today's episode. We are called the Tradies Business Show, but more and more I'm speaking to business owners, I'm talking to people such as yourself, to clients, and being a business owner is more than just marketing and Facebook and cash flow and all that sort of stuff. It's about how to be a human in this society that we're all affected by, customer psychology and employing staff. I mean, business is all about people. So more of my episodes, I want to have conversations with people like you, Michael, where we're talking about the things that are relevant to human relationships. And then I'm hoping that my listeners can glean some stuff from that, and I'm not talking complete crap, and they can apply that in their daily lives to improve their business. So the point you just raised before about you know, people have a morality that they can't afford. It's like, you know, we can't afford these sort of dream chart lives or vision board lives anymore, and we're faced with some pretty tough decisions. Obviously, and we were chatting a little bit before I hit record, unfortunately, suicide is a solution that a frightening number of people actually implement in their lives.
Yes.
And you've lost someone to suicide. Can you tell us a little more about that, mate? I mean, I don't want to sort of, you know.
Well, it's interesting, you know, he was, we were doing these little comic videos, and he was a Facebook friend, really, but he's in the acting circles down here. I knew him, you know. Really, really good looking guy, really talented. And he came and did, but when he came to do one of our videos, he was like this disheveled mess, and I was thinking, oh, this doesn't look good. And we had a few conversations on Messenger, just going back and forth. He was saying he's in a bad way and stuff like this. And I was sort of saying, you know, you should get some help and something like this. And then lo and behold, he just did it one night. And I was just stunned, thinking, oh, it just didn't occur to me that he would. You know, I just thought it was more like chatting, you could get past it. It was just like all of us think of it.
Yeah.
Not all think of it, but a lot of us did it every now and again.
Yep.
And he just seemed to have so much going for him that I just didn't take it as seriously as I should have.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people down here feel the same. And then he was gone.
Yep.
And then another thing too, we have a, I have a work now with a guy who used to be a funeral director, and he told me he quit because he was sick of turning up at these suburbs with these McMansions, where the men are taking their own lives in the mansion. You know, they've been so caught up in debt and working like crazy trying to service all this debt and build this Australian dream that they take themselves out. It's like an epidemic.
Yeah.
And so the stories like this that keep resonating with me and thinking, well, this is why I wanted to explore it. I hadn't seen anyone do it in sort of the way that I was thinking about it.
Mm, mm. So let's talk about the play because I think, you know, it's a good time to have a chat about that. And then I want to talk about, I guess, some more of these bigger issues and bigger topics that are affecting men. And you know, I'm not going to make any bones about it. A lot of my listeners are, you know, Australian men that are, like you say, maybe not living in the McMansions. Tradies make good money, but I don't think it's that good. But, you know, there's a lot of stresses and a lot of pressure and a lot of demands placed on our fathers and our uncles and our brothers. So we'll come back to that. But tell us a bit more about the play. So, you know, you've obviously lost someone reasonably close to you, and that's prompted you to write a play. Michael, can you give us a bit of an insight into it without obviously giving the whole thing away?
Okay. I had an idea for four guys trapped in like a sublayer of heaven. They don't really know where they are. And they've all attempted suicide and it's all failed. And now they're stuck there. They've been registered as failures. And that's all they know. They don't know their names. They don't have any phones or computers to muck around with, and they can't remember what sport they like. So it could be hell.
no sport, so that is hell.
Yeah, and they're stuck there, and like we have a young guy, a young country guy, and we've got a tradie, and we've got a professional, and we've got an office guy. So it comes from four different demographics. And these guys don't know what's happening. They're just stuck. They just can't figure out why they're not being sent back to their bodies. And they sort of, the play goes from there. It's like a mystery for why they're there. And the hindsight comes in as they start to really regret their decisions after it. And so they become more, as they, the regret grows more and more, and they really want to get back to their lives and really start fixing up their lives. The tension grows within the piece. But that doesn't sound funny, but it actually is funny. And I wanted it to be entertaining. I wanted it to be a not a comedy, but a lot of comedy in it, in order that when guys came to see it, they were laughing, they were enjoying it, and then they were moved by it as well, that they tell other guys, you've got to come and see this. And also, it's like a nutcracker. When we've had the readings, and the reading is where, you know, the guys are on scripts and they read it out from the script to an audience before we get to the stage. The audience afterwards, the men come up and the men just want to talk. They want to talk and talk and talk. And so we want to hold forums afterwards. So the play sort of opens you up, and the comedy reduces your shields. And the play opens you up, and then men want to talk. And I just think that's really healthy. So our plan is, if it works, to take from town, regional centres and the cities, and then it's followed by a forum where you've either got Lifeline or Dad's in Distress or something else are there, and go, okay, let's have a good old chat. Let's get a few beers and talk it out and open up and really discuss this thing, because it's an epidemic. This is, if we were losing as many men as we were to flu or anything else, we have a national emergency on our hands. And this now, I know there's a lot of stuff that's done with this and this, but there's still a great deal of silence compared to how many people are losing a day. It means terrific.
Yeah. Yeah, terrific, mate. And interestingly enough, the latest statistics, which you know, I'm not a big fan of stats, but the figures were released this week for you know, suicide in this country, and it pretty much remains largely unchanged from 2015 to 2016, and by far the largest part of those numbers is men. 75% of the people we lose to suicide are men. Now, there's a lot of conjecture around that, and, you know, I'm not looking to genderize this issue, but I also don't want to stuff around with being politically correct, and it's something that I want to talk to you about, Michael, because I've read the play, and I did laugh out loud, and my fiance wanted to know what I was laughing about, so I read some sections out to her, and she even had a chuckle. Now, it sounds a bit macabre that we would be laughing about something as serious and horrific as suicide, but, you know, I've been chatting to people lately, and we were chatting off air this afternoon as well about, I think, well, I'm going to call it the degradation of our language and our conversation tone around some of these issues. We're also paranoid about upsetting or offending other people and minority groups and interest groups, and you've only got to look to the, you know, the much maligned plebiscite and all of the shenanigans going on around that to see, I think, where we're going in terms of our human relationships. But, mate, give me some insights. I mean, you obviously wrote this play knowing that it was a little bit edgy as far as the language and the setting and the way it was talked about. What was behind that thinking, Michael?
Well, one of the characters is a tradie, and he is a... let's say he's an outlawed Australian male. I mean, in the tradie circles, he probably survives, and there's probably some factories where he still survives. But if he spoke the way he spoke in an office environment or a public transport environment or anything else like that, they'd sack him.
Yep.
And there's nothing really malicious or anything in anything that he says. He just tells it like it is. And sometimes he gets it wrong, but he's just opening his thoughts, and that's what we found. The audiences love him, and I actually was trying to show that these rough diamonds or this way of talking is actually healing, because what the play is based on a saying that comes from my mother, actually, that you can't reach the dawn unless you journey through the dark. Mm. And the only way to journey through the dark is to be honest with ourselves. And that's what this tradie guy is. Yep. Whenever the other guys try to get politically correct, he hits them down with a mallet. And and I find that's really, really refreshing. And in our society now, even with, like, the same-sex debate, like, regardless of which way you're voting, there's not actually a debate going on, really. It's like one side comes up and the other side is like, oh, you're this, you're this, you're this. And you know, I think we're in a country now where we really need to be able to talk about these major issues that are facing us.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing we can talk about without getting upset is laminating our kitchens or things like that. This didn't offend anyone.
Yeah.
You know, but for on other issues, if you raise up, you're racist, you're homophobic, you this, and basically it's just shutting you up.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are getting very isolated in themselves, probably women too, but especially men. And then the other thing too, which I think is on top of that, is like down here, we have lots of organizations now that are advertising just for women. And so men now, I'm 50, I'm 51. Men now, the guys I work with my age go, this is what they feel is they are unwanted by society.
Yep.
Their demographic is now called, oh, are you still here? You know, you're an unwanted, mature white male, go away.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and then so you wonder, well, does that have any correlation to the fact that the suicide rate is really high amongst this group? No one talks about it. It's like, oh, well, I don't know, but it's a dangerous minefield of a territory.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And we have tons to offer. I mean, most of us, you know, we can live now into our 80s. We've got like 30, 40 years of really productive life left in us, and yet we're seen as old, unchangeable, sick,
privileged,
and conditions. And I think that's wearing down on men. You know, I think men are getting very angry about that, actually.
Yeah, it's ironic, really. In the race for equality, we're creating more division amongst the genders and the races and the religions, and there seems to be more and more infighting, despite the cries of you know, striving for equality. It's like we've gone backwards with it all in some ways.
Well, I think the thing is gender equality, and at the moment, you know, the pendulum has gone too much one way. But I've got a 15-year-old son, and he said, well, this is not fair, you know, and he hasn't done anything. He hasn't been, you know, that's all gone. Except, you know, the feminist rise, he's born up in that.
Mm.
But he can see that there's a lack of fairness. And my father, who's 80, he says, you know, that the gender equality is all out of whack. So we need to get more to equality.
I mean,
you know, I've had women, I've had women bosses. You know, equality from my level, working class level, I see everywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, people say, oh, there's jobs where women get paid less than men. Well, I've never worked those jobs, so I don't know what they are.
You know.
But I think that a gender equality, and an equality means, you know, a freedom of speech too. I mean, this is what we fought wars for and everything, this freedom of speech. You know what I mean? And we can't have it. Even you've noticed in a lot of places, jokes are dead. I grew up in an era where there are people that tell jokes like crazy. You have to never hear them because you can't hardly say a joke. At least you bloody offend someone or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I actually went into a barber shop the other day. In the town where I live, it's about 250,000 people. There's only two barber shops left. The rest are all sort of chain stores and, you know, you get a different person every time. But there's two shops left where you go and you actually get your hair cut by the barber. And one of them is a guy, he's been doing it for 50 years. And, you know, he's in his late 60s, I think, or early 70s. But from the moment you walk in his barbershop, he's got the one-liners rolling off the tongue, and they're all inappropriate and they're all offensive to somebody, to the Irish or to the Catholics or to the nurses or whoever. But, you know, it's funny. He's funny as all get out. And, you know, as I left, most of his clientele are... sort of middle-aged, older men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like they go there partly because they just like to have a laugh. And
that was another thing. See, the laughter in the play isn't forced. You put these men together and, you know, a couple of them are jokers. They have fun. They like laughing. I actually think laughter... is one of the tools we're given by the universe to get through life. It gets us through everything. All of us have been to funerals where suddenly everyone's giggling because someone said something in the eulogy and everyone's laughing. You know, it's not bad to laugh. You know, it's It's not, it's seen as disrespectful, but it's not, you know, it's,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's the play. The play hasn't been written sort of for jokes. These guys just can't help but be funny. And, and so, yeah, it's barbers like that. It's, we were talking about this the other day. I was at a place even talking about, you can't talk about the different races. And I might say this is really interesting. And I said, okay, well, how about this? Is this racist? And what I was going was, like, you're a guy, a white guy, if you're an Indian, an African, or anything, and if you were walking down the street backwards, banging your head with your fists, you'd be thinking, oh, poor bastard, you know, look at him. You know, he's off with the fairies. If the person was Chinese, you'd be thinking, I bet that's bloody good for you. You know, like holistic medicine. Now, is that racist? But that's what we actually think, you know? You'd be thinking, you know,
yeah,
what to do with his fucking equilibrium or something. You know? Maybe I should do it. Now, is that racist? And everyone's going, well, you know, you're not really putting the Chinese down, but they don't know.
Yep.
And so everyone opts for silence, you know, like, oh, it's too dangerous. But this is curtailing our larrikin spirit.
And we're losing the connection and the conversations because of that strangling of people's voices. You know, they're too afraid to say anything, so we just all end up silent about so many things. And nobody. That's a, you know, all generalizations are bad, but you know, more and more people are just staying quiet about stuff and not having an opinion and not being passionate about anything and not stepping up to protect what they believe in. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that we have anarchy and everybody has their own say in their own way. But like you say, Michael, it's definitely looking like the pendulum has swung too far the other way on so many of these things.
Well, look at the, there was a girl recently who put up on Facebook that she was voting no.
And she got the sack.
She said, please vote no, these are my reasons. And a boss sacked her.
Yep.
Now, that's perfect, the thing. We've got a debate in the country about this. Watch your way. So to me, everyone has the right to put their opinion forward as delicately as you can, but you've got a right to talk about it. But this woman's obviously saying, well, no, you don't. And so if that woman was a man, say you've got a mortgage, you've got kids, you've got to, you know, you've got to look after your family, or you've just got a bills to pay, and you're thinking, well, if I say what I want to say, I could lose my job and endanger everything.
Yeah.
So you're forced to say something out of, you know, because you love, you know what I mean? It's, and that's where we are now. I mean, even in the text of the work that I do, in my text, it says in there, then you put anything offensive up on Facebook, even if it's got nothing to do with the work I do, that could offend anybody, they can discipline me, severely discipline me.
Yeah.
You know? And since spanking is out, but I take it that means sacking. You know, that's what the corporations have got in their literature, and that's silencing a generation. And, I think this is something really that we have to discuss, okay? Where's the borders between what we do, you know, and stuff like this, and the freedom and the health of being able to talk.
So it's something that, I mean, we've probably already upset a bunch of people, Michael, in this conversation. But, you know, rather than just talk about what the problem is, I'm curious to know, you know, you've written this play and you've obviously written a few. What do you see as a way forward with this, or what are some changes that you think we ought to be making? And I want to try and loop around to, you know, our listeners sitting there running a business, running a family, could be a husband or a wife, you know, a tradie wife as well, listen to the show. Like, how the hell does this apply to them, and how might this be showing up in their lives, and what can they do about it?
Okay, I think one interesting thing, I don't know if you've got them up in Queensland, we've got a thing down here called Fernwood, which is gyms just for women.
Yep.
And we've got a lot of things like that just for women. We've even got some nightclubs that are just for days, you know, because I know we have the men's sheds for the older men. I think it's time that we went back and got some places where men can go and maybe hang out and piss butt around and just let it out and not be scared that anything they're going to say is going to to have any consequence in their lives. I think that could be really healthy. And just allowing men to just be men without having to think, can I say that? Can I do this? Can I? Will that give me this? They can actually just be. And if they want it, it's there for them. You know what I mean? There's one interesting thing. This is really interesting, and you'll see it in schools. My kids are out of school, in high school now. Don't do. But when you used to go to the parent pick up when they're in primary school, and this is really got to think of it. You'd be standing there. And there'd be mothers walking around in their leggings. And I like looking women bum. I just like it. And you go and you're with a guy and you go, oh, look at that. And these guys are like this.
They're too afraid to look sideways.
They're too afraid to look, because if I look, there's going to be consequences. And so then I think, yeah, but look, the women are even wearing lighter ones. So maybe the women are so desperate to look, they're wearing lighter. Look, and he's going, I can't look down. Just mental. I actually think the real answer is to allowing men some freedom to be men. Men, some men like men, but a lot of men like women. We do. It's we just do, you know. And we're not all bad. There's a lot of good qualities to men. You know, we're a lot of fun to have around. We lift things. We pick things up.
We're useful for a whole bunch of stuff, aren't we, mate?
Yeah, we are. You know, We're not all bad. I know we have some bad, but we're not all bad. You know, maybe if it wasn't for us, the porn industry would collapse. You know, we have benefits to us. But the
point of that is, mate, is...
It's actually up to us men to go, okay, who are we and what does it mean to be a man in this era? And what do we want? If we want gender equality, okay, what do we want? The women wanted to burn their bras. And I was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. And then, we'll burn our jock straps.
Yeah, yeah. You know, burn our jock straps. What do we want? As men, maybe we need to get together and go, what does that mean to us? You know, what do we want the freedom to say? What do we think is over the line? And maybe it's time for us to follow everyone else and go, okay, who are we? Because everything's like, you know, a lot of things, oh, you've got to cry, but... I don't generally want to cry every day. It's not something I really, you know, that's not a big thing for me. I'd rather have the ability to have a laugh.
Yeah.
It'd be more healthy for me than a cry.
Yep.
You know?
It's interesting. It's an interesting point, Michael, and we've got a little bit of Skype lag here, so sorry for talking over the top of you. But a couple of years ago now, you know, I've been through a separation and coming out of the end of a divorce and all that sort of stuff. Pretty funky time in my life. And... when I was sort of in the thick of it all, I was being very withdrawn and submissive, and you know, I was allowing some things to happen around all of that probably weren't serving me. Well, they definitely weren't serving me, and I don't think in the long term they were going to serve my daughter either. But I had a mate of mine at the time who he. Very loving guy, very spiritual guy, fantastic fella. I did another podcast with him for a while. He actually, tongue in cheek, is important to say, threatened me with physical violence if I didn't stop bitching and moaning about it and actually do something to change what was going on. And, you know, it was just what I needed. Like, he threatened me. Now, I know he wasn't ever going to physically harm me, but that's kind of that bloke's way of dealing with stuff is, you know, change what you're doing or I'm going to smash you in the face with a hammer, you know? It's like...
And that happens to a degree in the play, you know what I mean? There's some lines in the play which you think, like when we showed it to Men's Line, they before they even read it, they said, you can't use the word failure. Have you used the word failure? You can't use the word failure. And we're going, well, yeah, all the way through. You know, it's... But it's seen as the miracle if they fail. But it's But there's this thing of saying, you can't do this, you can't say that, you can't say that, where actually your mate has proved, no, that's actually what you need. You need to come up and say, no, come on.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Snap out of it. Now, yeah. As I said, a complete lack of boundaries and respect and everything is not what we're suggesting. And I'm not saying that by way of disclaimer, more that it's about a balance. And it's the same in our businesses and our lives. And I see a lot of business people and business owners who have done the same. They swung too far the other way. They're too afraid to even say no to their customers. And, you know, they look me in the eye when I suggest that they say no to certain customers. It's like, thanks very much, but, you know, we'd rather not do your work for you. They're like, you can't do that. What if they complain? What if they write me a bad review on Facebook? It's like, so you thank them for their feedback and you move on. You know, no one's going to die. But there's this fear of, it's almost like this fear of offending people has permeated our own actions around, well, what if I do the wrong thing? You know, what if I make the wrong decision in my business? What if I send my kids to the wrong school? What if I employ the wrong person for the job, or do my marketing wrong, or get the headline wrong on my freaking email? And so there's so much paralysis amongst people just in their day-to-day lives, particularly as business owners. I guess I'm interested in your thoughts on that, Michael. I mean, you probably, you know, you're working in an artistic space. As far as our tradie business owner listeners, what do you think is a way for them to change that? Or how do they go about, you know, if someone's listening to this going, yeah, well, I do feel like that, but shit was, I can't change that. That's just the way it is. Are we just stuck with this, Michael?
I don't think this is a really grey question, and it's a really difficult thing that needs more than just what we're doing now is correct. Talking about it, saying here's the issue, it's complicated, it's difficult, but along with what you're saying, with the inability, not having the freedom to speak or too scared to offend everybody, there is also a rise in anxiety level. I think this is, that is linked to that, and the anxiety is crippling us, and we're passing that on to our kids. So we're becoming this frightened, fearful society, and we don't really have. I mean, I know we've got issues, but every generation has issues. You know, I think robust discussion. I think. Even to the point of, well, okay, it's okay to disagree with each other and still get on. You know, there's and that's why the same sex thing is so interesting at the moment. People are going, if you vote no, I'm befriending you.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking really interesting. You know, so you can only have friends who vote with you.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and I'm saying, well, the people who are doing that are actually, you're actually working against the change, because the other people are thinking, well, I don't want a society where I have to agree. I want to have the right to disagree. I want to have the right to have my own thought.
Sure.
And I think it's going back to saying we need, there's a men's rights group moving, and I think it's naturally growing. And when you hear my 80-year-old father going, we need men's rights, and my father's been a quiet man all his life, you know we've reached the point where us guys have to get up and go, okay, look, you've just got to start liking men's like stuff or sharing it or getting in there, supporting it. Having this woman say to me, only women buy tickets, men aren't interested, is, to me, that was like a defining moment of thinking, well, that's just wrong. And if they aren't, then they need to change.
Yep.
Because we're losing this many people, this many blokes a day, then it's time for us to actually take an active interest and say this is wrong. We need to work together. We need to do something. We need to do something, even if you don't know what it is. But we need to start doing, standing back, being silent, and working. We're just falling off the perch. So what we're doing now, this conversation here, talking, this is the start of it. This is the start of the tide. I think the tide's already started with the men's rights group. Another interesting thing was that red pill thing that came out. Remember that still documentary.
Didn't that ruffle some feathers?
Now, all she said was she went to investigate it, and I'd never heard of Red Pill. And I got with my 15-year-old son and said, well, let's watch the documentary, see what it's all about. What? It's just men saying, look, it's time for some male rights. It's time for us to maybe address the issue and say, you know, we've got to equalize it, especially when it comes to divorce courts, especially when it comes to kids and stuff like that, because they're the men we're losing. Sunday night, after they hand over the kids, that's often where they lose the men. Because who am I? Who am I as a man? I was a father, and to be a father now, if I get this in, my son's going to kill me. My son and I had an altercation about something a little while ago, and because of the way the kids had taught him, he called a counsellor, the counsellor called the police called the school, and suddenly I'm this. And it's nothing to anything my father would have done to me as a kid. But suddenly you realise, as a father, you have no say. And that's what I say in the play. You are a money-earning spectator. And then when it comes to the divorce court, which has got a lot of mates going through that now, that's even more. You know, as you said yourself, you sort of become, it's like you're going, okay, best thing to go is just go like quiet as a mouse, and once we stop kicking you, then you can move on with your life.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is working.
Yeah.
This ain't working. It's unhealthy for us. And men, fathers, I mean, we lay down our lives for our kids. You know?
Yeah.
It's and even guys who've got kids who they've left, they still it's we're not these unfeeling, heartless stones that we seem to be portrayed as. We're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Being a father is incredibly important to me. You know, it's I can't even remember my life before I was a father. You know, it's just who I am. Now.
Yeah.
Not that I'm good at it, but I'm just who I am. but yeah, these things, yeah, I'm rambling now, but I think generating discussion, and that's what it is, this play, because what I realise I can do is I don't have the answers, but I'm good at getting questions going.
Yeah.
And that's what this play does. This play gets questions. It's a shit-stirring play, and it's to get you thinking, get you talking, and generate conversation and stuff like this. And afterwards, the men that have come up, they talk to me not about how they wanted to do it, but how they got past it. And that's the information we need to that the other men need to hear. Yeah, you'll get to a situation where you think, fuck it, I've got a gun, I'm out of here. And that's when you need to hear the advice of other men of how to get past those moments.
Yeah.
Because there's still lots of life to live, and you've got forever to be dead. And there's lots of life to live. You can get through all sorts of manner of shit and come back. And you're worthy. And the most beautiful thing for me in the play is the office worker, who is like a nothing of a man, really, in society, we get to see how much worth he has and how much good he can offer. And he's just an office administrator. Men have great worth. And this way we have society set up at the moment, the ageism and all these other things, where men over 50 are seen or overkill, is a complete economic disaster, and it's a waste of a valuable resource, which is men.
Yeah, it's interesting, Michael, because I was having a chat with a tradie just this week about the, you know, the much maligned skills shortage in this country, and you know, we have a lack of skilled and experienced workers in a whole lot of industries, but in particular the trades. And you know, my dad was a builder and a screen printer in his younger days, and he learned from tradespeople. But it's like, you know, we like you're saying, we're silencing people so much. And obviously, we're talking predominantly about men today. We're losing a lot of that transfer of knowledge. And, I mean, nearly 3,000 Australians took their own lives in 2016, and 75% of them were men. So that's a hell of a knowledge base that we're losing through that tragedy. And, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the impact of that, but also the people who aren't willing to speak out about stuff. You know, they're not willing to you know, pull somebody up, pull up an apprentice on something because he might take them to Fair Work or she might take them to Fair Work and complain about their treatment, you know, because they're not doing their job properly.
Yeah.
And I was literally sitting here in my studio talking to somebody just a day or two ago that employers are pretty much becoming the second wave of parents to a lot of the their young employees.
Yeah.
Because they're having to teach them life skills. They're having to teach them to deal with conflict and critical feedback. And, you know, that's not acceptable. You need to change your behavior. And unfortunately, that's not accepted very well by a lot of people who are in the workforce these days.
Well, what's interesting is the employee actually has almost more rights than the parent because they can sack them right out the door. As a parent, you can't. You know, most of the time, but I do know in schools, even from when we were, I'm not saying you've got to have hit the kids, but it's even from when my children were small, they go, no, you can't do anything to us as you do, you know, the teacher's problems to tell the kids in trouble. And I'm thinking, this is really interesting because it does come up to that. You can't, you know, down here now they're saying to the parents bringing in the law that if your kid doesn't go to school, they can fine you. But if you do anything to force the kid to go to school, he can get you arrested. You know, it's just really, there's a sense of powerless almost. You want to love, you want to do this, you want to, even like that mate that said that thing to you where he said he's going to bash it. Now, politically correct world, that is completely wrong. That's out. You know what I mean? If you get your father, you could go, well, I'm getting you arrested. You're getting me wrong.
Yep.
But that's a form of love.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, this guy taking a risk with your friendship, saying, listen, you know, we can lose the friendship here, but you need to get your shit together.
And you know, sorry, Michael, he was the first phone call I made when my marriage fell apart, and I was you know, very close to making a rash decision about my own life. His was the first number I dialed because I knew he wouldn't judge me. He wouldn't ridicule me. I knew he would understand. It was just, you know, it was an emotive decision to call him, but he was the number I called.
That's great.
So, you know, he's the most non-PC guy I know.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that interesting, you know what I mean? That's awesome. That's an awesome story.
So I want to ask you about authenticity, Michael. Obviously, you know, you've shared some thoughts and opinions today, which some people might consider to be offensive or upsetting or whatever it might be, and you know, it's certainly not our intent to upset anybody, but if there's one thing I would say, it's that you've been authentic today, and my listeners can't see you on Skype here, but I've been watching your facial reactions, and you know, it's evident in our conversation that I'm speaking to the real Michael. How important do you think that is in our relationships? And again, I want to still draw perhaps a tenuous link between this conversation and owning a business. What part does authenticity play these days in being a business owner and just being a member of society?
Well, I'll talk from being a member of society. That's a choice I made. You watch these. Well, I saw this guy on Facebook a few years ago, actually, a professor urging people to speak the truth, no matter who it hurts, who it offends, in order that in your time in this life, whatever this life is, you get the most out of it. You get to be the real you. You know what I mean? And I find that interesting. Life's a journey. Maybe for me, for the writing, I don't know. But for me, life's a journey. Even if you're stuck in the one place, it's learning, it's growing, it's thinking, it's being who you are. You know, it's learning to accept yourself for who you are, your faults and everything like this. And in that journey, truth is the only thing you can build on. You can't build on lies. You can't build on bullshit. truth can fix you, can repair you, and can build. And that's why in a lot of relationships that go awry, it's the head-screwing thing that just absolutely drives people nuts, you know, because they know it's not the truth and they can't figure out which way to go, where the truth really does set you free, as much as you can know the truth. I mean, the truth is that we're on a rock spinning through all this black space that doesn't, you know, you can't really use them in your daily life.
Personal truth, though.
But the personal truth, yeah, the personal truth of who you are and what you want to do with your time on the planet is, I think, what it's about. And that's the way to build relationships, because then you know if someone's with you, they're with you because they like you. That's it, because they can see who you are. That's it. If you don't like me, well, no offense, you know, but that's why. Yeah. But for me, the journey for myself and in my writing and stuff like this, that's always about trying to find understanding what's going on and also looking for an Australian identity, because I think we've lost it. I think we've lost who we are as Australians, and I think we're surviving on old myths, and those old myths are curtailed in political correctness, and we're sort of lost in the middle of it, who we are and where are we going, you know? It'd be great to have one visionary politician who stood up and, instead of saying all the crap that they usually say, gave us some great grand vision, we could all aim for the one thing. But for the moment, yeah, for the moment, my journey is trying to understand who I am in this thing and trying to stir up questions about things that are that mean a lot to me and men mean a lot to me, not in the same-sex marriage. Well, though you and I can get married shortly if we're successful, but...
Well, I'm already engaged to somebody else, mate. So that's not currently legal.
but the journey to men. I think this is a really exciting time for men. I think men can actually come up and find out who they are, find their place in the world, say this is us, and do what the women did. The women did it. They did it against the oppression of us. And now I think it's our turn to turn up. So yeah, we're getting a bit of flack. That's how it goes, you know, and it's coming up and saying we're a part of the cake too, you know, we want our slice. And we have to do it, because if we don't, we're just going to keep losing more and more men. And that's a tragedy, not only for the men we lose, but for every man we lose, they're surrounded by people that just are devastated by their loss. The mother of my friend, she told me for a year she's just collapsed. She's done nothing. So it's more than just this. It's like these 3,000 men are like massive minefields, massive sort of craters, emotional craters going off in our society. Yeah. So it's more than just the statistics of the number. It's everyone that gets affected by it.
The thing, you know, we talk about the statistics and, you know, just on rough sort of numbers, it's about 6 men per day take their lives in Australia alone. That's not worldwide, that's just in Australia. And, you know, their fathers and brothers and business owners, you know, it's the ripple effect is massive. You know, they're leaving widows behind, or, you know, spouses behind, partners behind. But yeah, I think, you know, some great points there on living an authentic life, Michael, and certainly...
Interesting with that point. My job doesn't allow like me saying what I do now. I think I probably already said it, but they don't like me. They actually told me don't tell them because that's how it is. But I work with a lot of guys. One of the men who's been there for 40 years, and I asked him, how many suicides have happened with the men since you've been working here? And he said none. And in the staff room, the men are just talk about anything. They are just freely open, and every second line someone's laughing at something, and the seriousness, or everything gets handled in there, the seriousness. It comes up, it gets handled respectfully, then joked and pushed around, like what your mate does.
Yeah.
And even in that little bit of socialization with the men, I think that links to the fact that they haven't lost one man in the 40 years. And so that's another thing you play. It's almost like it's set in the staff room. So it's, I think there's something there that could save lives in allowing men to be together, letting them be themselves, and seeing they can nurturingly help themselves through the dark moments of their lives.
Mm. Certainly, some fascinating issues there, Michael, and it's been fantastic talking to you today. The play is called Suicide Row, and it's currently running in Melbourne. Is that right?
Yeah, it's opens in November the 1st in Paran, in a great new place there called MC Showroom, and then hopefully it works. And then we're going to take it from there. We're going to try tour it and take it round and see if we can crack open some men.
Yeah, yeah, crack some thick skulls. So if people do want to find out more about you and Suicide Row or any of your other plays, is there somewhere they can go to read more about you, Michael?
Yeah, find it on Facebook. You can Suicide Row on Facebook. I think we're the only one. It's not a popular title. I think we're also Google us. We come up first as well. And then it's my name. I mean, I can send links through you guys if you've got it there. But that's about it. We don't have a website because no one seems to go to them much anymore. It seems to be more
Facebook,
social media.
Anti-social media. I'll pop the links in the show notes for this episode. And and what address should they send the hate mail to, Michael? Don't send it to me. They're all Michael's opinions, not mine, just because I had him on the show.
No, look, I welcome the opinions. I love having a good stoush.
Yeah.
Facebook, no problem at all. Befriend me, have a crack. I'll be there. If I've got the time, I'll be there. Just give me the time to comment back. But I think it's very, very, very healthy to air our grievances.
Absolutely, mate. I mean, I think we're losing the art of a good debate and a robust conversation without making it personal and feeling like, you know, that I'm being threatened. So,
No, it's just getting it out there, having a good old spout.
Absolutely.
Keating said, you should be judged by the people that hate you more than the people that like you. Something like that he said. And, you know, he was a great guy. He loved a great spout. So, I don't mind that at all.
Good stuff, mate. So just quickly, what's next for you? Do you have another project in the wings?
We've got another play coming up pretty well straight afterwards, which we're really excited about because we contacted a Sydney director called Arnie Neamy, who used to direct Homicide and Matlock and Sea Rescue, all those things. And I said, look, what do you think of this? And he said, I want to come down and direct it for free. And we're like, wow. So, and that's about a father who, just a dead ordinary security guy, a strange thing. And his daughter has committed a robbery. She's a nice addict. She's committed a robbery and he abducts her. And he has no intention of handing over to the authorities. He's going to try to save her even though everyone's after her. And it's all about the love that a father can build to a child, even the child in this thing. So it's a big thriller, but people like it, so we're getting straight onto the afterwards. So it's called When Iceberg Burns. So that was supposed to be next, but this play just turned up, so we're going with this one first. But,
nice, mate. Nice. Good to see you're not afraid of sticking your neck out in a bit of creative expression and tackling some of the big social issues, Michael. So
it's actually really interesting to do. You know, it's actually great material there. I think if there's any guys out there who want to write, I think don't be frightened. This is if you're not writing about the issues, you know, that's what it's about. Art is about tackling the issues. That's what it's supposed to be about. You know, not all of it. You know, you can't understand it as well, but you know. Why not? Here we are. These are the great issues of our time. We have some massive issues on our plate, and we need to tackle them.
Well, Suicide Ray certainly does that. Michael, thank you again for coming on the Tradies Business Show. It's been an awesome chat, and I look forward to speaking with you more and hopefully seeing the play come to my region as well. So fingers crossed for that one, mate.
Yeah, no worries.
Awesome.
Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell. Want to get off the tools and into true business ownership? Find out how at tradiesbusinessshow.com.